toe gets hit because you're sitting on a thing.
It's still better to sit on the thing than actually be in a crouch, just judging from my own personal experience.
No, you're probably right about that. Gentlemen, thank you very much. The Bernstein and McKnight Show is every day, 9 a.m. until noon. We are Sports Radio 670 The Score, WSCR in HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The top of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making the 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. This hour is also being brought to you by Burris Equipment. Visit them at burrisequipment.com for details. Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I'm here about the business. Ain't that right, Joe?
Joe Madden.
He's got that flair about him. When his name's announced, the place erupts all the time, but he's always in the middle of something good.
Manager for the Chicago Cubs.
And then Cliff and Shelley, the Penguins. I mean, all this stuff, the Penguins, like, pooped all over. They poop every 15 minutes, apparently. That's what Penguins do. All over the brand-new rug on the other side. It was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, hey, I learned a lot from watching Joe.
Joe Madden with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Okay, nice.
We do it every Tuesday at noon, and we are so happy that you are here with us. We get the opportunity to talk with the manager of your Chicago Cubs. That is Joe Madden. And by the way, if you haven't signed up, you should, to get yourself a foursome in the Try Not to Suck golf tournament that's going to be at Bryn Mawr on August 19th. Call Jerry if you want to get a foursome. This is a hot ticket. So call Jerry Lasky at 312-502-8300. Now joining me on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, find 500 new and used vehicles at Alpamonte Ford. It's the manager of the Cubs, Joe Madden. Hey, Joe.
Good morning, Lawrence. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. How's Colorado?
Beautiful. I love it out here. I'm looking out the window right now, and that's right. That's where I got signed because I played in Boulder. It's about half-hour drive. I think it's up, 33? And Baseline Road, that's where I worked at the Baseline Liquor Store. That's where I proposed to my wife, Jay, and I got nothing but warm fuzzies about Colorado.
I love that place, and I'm with you. I love Boulder. It's a beautiful place to kind of lose yourself inside the scenery.
It is. It's magnificent. Imagine that was 1975. So I'm 1975, 21 years of age, and I'm out here trying to play some baseball, and it's really my first time that far away from home. And getting to play against guys from Texas, Oklahoma, Southern California, it was really a growth moment for me, both on and off the field. It was spectacular.
What do you think is the biggest lesson that you learned from that time in Colorado?
That I belong here. I can do this. It's something about the five levels that I've talked about, level one being happy to be here, two, survival, three, I belong here. I can do this, four. I want to make as much money as possible. Level five, all I want to do is win, and that's what the T-shirt is that's out. But when I came out here, I was at Lafayette College, you know, small college, playing some good ball back east, did well in the Atlantic Collegiate Baseball League in the summertime. But this was my first attempt at what I thought was, of course, the bigger time, big time kind of baseball, college baseball, summer ball. So I get out here, there's four other catchers. I'm one of five, and, I wasn't told that before I left. But when I got here, I started playing regularly, and then maybe after 2 weeks, I finally figured out, you know what, I can play with these guys, meaning, the guys from the better players from all over the country. We ended up winning the NBC tournament that summer against a really great group of players in Wichita. So that was the aha moment where I belong here, I can do this.
So for you, when you were scouting or even now, as a coach or as a manager, what's it like for you when you've tried to tell a player that they belong here and then the light clicks on and they reach that level three? Yes, I do belong here.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular when that occurs. And honestly, if you probably at work, you can do this there where you work, and definitely within our group, our coaches and managers, they're into the five levels. Now we could tell if a guy where the guy is at on the level chain. And when it does arrive, you could just sense it, feel it, see it in the fellow's eyes that he does. He's also had that aha moment where he's not just trying to survive anymore. And survival to me is really dangerous because survival guys are just there to try to do that. They're not there to necessarily win. They're there to not embarrass themselves, and maybe that is the try not to suck theory, but they're there to play another day. I like this. I love this. I've got to stay here somehow. But their focus isn't winning. But when you get to, I belong here, I can do this, then they can get beyond the survival. Now I'm good. I'm as good as these guys right now. They can focus on winning more and helping the team on a daily basis. And believe me, man, you could sense that or feel that when you talk to guys. And I'll say that to them. You're right. I mean, when I feel a player's arrived at that point, I'll remind them, man, you're at that point now where you know you can do this or you belong here. And it makes a huge difference in their method and their daily approach.
Is it hard to get them there? Because I imagine that survival instinct is real strong.
You know, there's some guys that when they even arrive happy to be here, there's, I don't know if the word's cocky or self-assured or whatever, but it's, there's some guys that automatically know. I could tell you Wally Joyner, when I had Wallace Keith back in the early 80s, Wally, even from the moment we signed him, and I was a signing scout there, that he really thought he was a big leaguer at that moment. If, remember one spring training, he asked me, or he said to me, you know, he's gonna win the first baseman role. I said, no, you're not, because Rod Carew's here. You're not going to be the first baseman yet. But Wally believed that he should be, and that's even before he had arrived. So some guys come with that chip in them. Other guys, like myself, I had to find that out. I had to know that. I had to satisfy my own inner thought process that, yeah, I belong here, I can do this. And others just have that chip from the beginning. So it's different in each guy, and I just try to cultivate it as much as I can.
Since you're out there staring at the Rocky Mountains, what was it like for you to be there as Carlos Gonzalez comes back to Denver?
That's pretty cool. You know, you realize how the people feel about him. Of course, you kind of knew that, but then when you actually see it, it carries a different weight to it. Prior to the game, they put a little thing up on the board, a tribute to him up on the board as he was playing catch in the left field, and that was neat. And then his at-bat, you know, it was a big crowd last night. My God, Monday night, huge crowd. I was talking to Nolan Arenado afterwards, and he was really impressed with the crowd. It was. So it's a huge crowd paying tribute to one of their stars from the past, and I thought it was awesome.
How's he fit in the first week or so that he's been a Cub?
Oh, he's wonderful. He's a professional. He's a professional, man. He gets ready. He's, I know he feels, again, that at ease. And again, he's not here to try to impress us. He's here to play and help us win. I've had some brief conversations with him, but he's very self-assured. And you see him the whole game. I mean, saw the homer the other day at home, some really good at-bats. And the defense, the guy's a better defender than he'd been, although he'd won some gold gloves. He's really a good defender. So all this stuff is becoming obvious.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon joining me here on The Score. What were your conversations with Craig Kimbrel like?
You know, in the beginning when I first met him in the hallway with Theo and the guys, started out by telling him how happy we are that he is here. Obviously that I'd been a fan in the past. And also I'd gotten a text from Troy Percival, and Percy wanted me to tell him that he's his favorite. So I relayed that to Craig also. But it's been primarily about, you know, just trying to get to know him a little bit, and also having him understand that I'm an advocate also of not rushing through this process of getting here. Make sure that all the boxes are checked, that you feel good, that you're strong and ready to rock and roll, and to not hurry anything. And he was in agreement with that. It was really in the press conference. It came through very clearly how much of a family guy he is, and really how, again, self-assured he is. He's very comfortable in his own skin and how he speaks, and I really appreciated that too.
Joe, do you mind if I ask you a little bit about the process of getting him ready? Because quite honestly, I don't know enough about it. I just wanted to ask you a little bit. So, like, who's there in Arizona to work with Kimbrel?
Our staff there for the Arizona extended spring. So they'll be out there, and I can't say specifically all the coaches that are there, but it's almost like a normal spring training where he will throw on the side with just a catcher with the coach watching him, and the coach that will be watching him will be made aware of all the different things that Craig needs or you know, particular points that keeps him in line, and it'll be a conversation between Craig and the pitching coach. They'll do that a couple, three times, and then they'll do it with hitters. And then not like necessarily a game, but like you do in spring training, they normally go through about three, maybe four, call them side pieces where they throw just the catcher. And then after you're satisfied with that, you actually put hitters in there for BP, probably like up to 10 minutes of throwing on the side, and then maybe start out with 25 pitches to hitters. And then you build in with that. And then after maybe two times throwing the hitters, then you get to the point where you're ready to throw it and actually in a game. It could be a simulated game where we could deem that he's ready to go out and pitch in an actual game with the minor league club. So it goes from throwing on the side with just a catcher, just like spring training, to throwing the hitters, like a elevated batting practice, to eventually either a simulated game or with the minor league affiliate.
So the players that are there are minor league players, or is it like ex-players that might be there?
No, minor league guys, all minor league guys, young, really young too, very young, very inexperienced, so I'm sure they'll be literally blown away by his stuff.
Okay, all right, well, thank you. I appreciate you kind of explaining the process, because I was curious about all the things that would have to happen between now and him getting to Iowa. And your approach is one of being cautious, right? You don't want to rush this with him because there's still a lot of baseball to be played.
Yeah, there's no reason to. And it's not any different than a normal spring training, where just think of it as spring training for him. That's it. I mean, with us, like Pedro Strop, even though we reported maybe, February, whatever, 20th, we did all the pitcher's drills. And that's another thing he's got to cover first. He's got to throw to the bases, all the other different kind of PFPs, pitcher's fielding practices. And then, like Stropey, we did not actually pitch him in the game maybe till like the first week of March. You try to parcel out maybe 7 or 8 appearances during spring training for the guys. And so just think of it like a 3-week window of spring training, or 4 week. I'm not sure exactly how long it's going to take. It could even be quicker. I'm not certain. But it's all based on the kind of shape that he's in. He's been throwing a lot, working out a lot. But the window normally for our relievers in camp is the first week of March till about the beginning of the season in April.
Theo was on our air on Friday, and he was talking about how big a role that Dave Ross played in helping Kimbrel get signed. I'd love to know from you the fact that your catcher, a guy that knows how you think, is still a part of this organization, is able to put his eyes on a potential signing. How valuable is that to you?
It is, and plus the fact that you have confidence in his opinion matters a lot too. And obviously you would think that, just based on, you know, people saw how David was here and how well he did, and almost like being a coach on the field. So none of that is a surprise. Rossi and I talk a lot. We have great conversation. He is eager to learn. He wants to. I really believe Major League managership is in his foreseeable future. And he's just trying to prep himself. But then Theo gives him a scouting assignment, which I love. Because to me, and I've encouraged David to do this, I really think a lot of these guys that are managing now young, it'd be really benefit them to go manage rookie ball and scout, free agent scouting for a season or two before they really jump into a major league dugout. I think the most valuable thing I've ever done is to scout. And part of my territory was right here in Denver. I used to, from Arizona, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico was my territory. And I remember watching Daryl Ackerfels up here, and Mike Trujillo, and all these guys that came through Denver at that time had a great base. I could go on and on, but I mean, to scout and to manage, and then manage rookie ball would be great, because that's when you see guys really as novices, and you could see what the product looks like before it becomes Mike Trout or whomever, or Anthony Rizzo or Chris Bryant. All those things to me are important. I don't think enough guys do that, where you get in your car and pound the bushes and scout locally, and then go manage a bunch of guys that are really coming out of the womb, and then take your craft to a higher level, and you could really understand patience and how to build a player into a major league player.
Once Kimbrel gets here, he has a defined role. We know that from his career. What does that do for you when it comes to figuring out how your day is going to go on the mound?
Well, it really, it's like when you insert a really good hitter into a batting order, it makes the batting order longer, and it makes your bullpen longer. Now that you can use guys sooner in the game if necessary. Right now, our starters have been doing such a wonderful job, it's been somewhat easier to match up the latter part of the game. But there's going to be days it's not like that. And when you have enough length in your bullpen, you could hold a small deficit or a small lead in the fifth or sixth inning. Makes all the difference in the world when you get that extra victory by the end of the season. So it lengthens the pen. It puts different guys in different roles earlier in the game. Some will be more suited for that, and some will be more comfortable with that. So when you have the closer at the end of the game, like Kimbrel, it really makes the bullpen longer.
Joe, Kyle Schwarber is really taken to the leadoff spot again. Over the last 2 weeks, he's been pretty good. What's he doing right at the plate?
Well, I really, he's not missing his pitch. I think he's put himself in better position to not miss his pitch. And I don't want to get into too much detail about that, but when guys are really good hitters, and really good hitters don't miss their pitch often. They don't foul it off. They don't take it. And more recently, he's not been fouling it off and he's not been taking it. Like last night, the punch out to end the game, I mean, Wade's done that to a lot of guys. He just popped a nasty hook in there to end the game. I'm not worried about stuff like that. But overall, Kyle's at-bats have been really he's maturing. He's maturing in the batter's box. He's set up. I'm liking it even better. He's more handsy. He's keeping the body out of it. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And as long as he maintains this method, he can sustain this for a bit.
Okay, good. I mean, that's good because that, I would imagine, alleviates a lot of pressure on you if you've got guys that you feel comfortable in different roles in your lineup.
Oh, yeah. Now, we're going to have to test it out. We go to L.A. When you got all these lefties showing up. I think we got, out of the next 8 games starting in Los Angeles, maybe 5 left-handed starters, which we don't normally see. If you look at the NL Central, it's a very right-handed heavy division. And when you go out west, it tends to get more heavily left-handed. So that's where we're going to be tested regarding all this theory, giving Kyle a shot to lead off against some really high-end lefties with Kershaw, Hill, and Ryu. And I haven't decided yet exactly how we're going to work the lineup in those three games out of the 4. Then we get back home. There's a lefty pitching for the Mets, Vargas, and one the series before that. The White Sox have a lefty throwing. So there's a different method that's going to be showing up very soon.
This weekend against the Cardinals, it seemed like it was one of those series that had a lot of energy in the crowd. Did you feel that in the dugout?
No question. Yeah. I mean, yes. And then what was it? When did we have the makeup game? Was it with the Angels where we had 40,000 on a Monday in a makeup game? That's ridiculous. Nobody gets that. So our fans have been awesome. The place has been buzzing. It's there's no place like it. No place like it. It's just a different vibe. And, yes, our players feed off the energy.
All right, Joe. So I've kind of crowdsourced the fun questions out to Cub fans. Oh. I figured that we might do that. So Tony, my producer Tony, he created a box full of questions from Cub fans that they want to throw at you. You ready?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's see. Pull this one out. And this question is, which Cub wears the most cologne?
Well, there's some guys, man, that you know, if you give them a hug or whatever, it's almost like you can't even go see your wife right after that. She's going to be suspicious. I mean, some of these dudes really, I would say, you know, Pedro, Soapy's the man. He really lathers up, boy, and I'm telling you, be careful if you give him a hug. It's going to stick for several minutes or hours.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I definitely know that. Like, I've had some friends, some older gentlemen, that you hug them and you go, okay, now I smell like this guy. And that's all right. Like, it's totally okay.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Is there anything that consistently makes you tear up or cry?
Oh, yeah. Consistently. The certain movies, emotional movies. I mean, even, I don't know, sometimes, like, even you know, with the players, when they're doing something that's spectacular, they come back in the dugout, and I don't well up and cry, but God, I might gag internally, and I don't even want to talk out loud. I love when our guys accomplish, when they work hard, and all of a sudden the accomplishment occurs, and they come back in the dugout, and you watch them revel with their teammates. That moves me sometimes.
Okay, here's the last one. Excluding current Cubs, who's been your favorite player to manage?
Darren Erstad, possibly. I mean, I had Timmy Salmon. Ersty and I still stay in touch, but so do Fish and I. I mean, I had so many good ones with the, especially with the Angels. I think I'm going there because that's when I was growing up with all this stuff. You know, Timothy in the minor leagues and Garrett Anderson and Jimmy Edmonds and God, the list I could reach between 1984 and 1994 was pretty impressive. I think we as the Angel group put more guys in the big leagues than any other organization in that decade. The one guy that I spent a lot of time with, analyzing stuff before analytics became popular was Ersti. Ersti and I would sit down and try to figure out what that pitcher was going to do to him on a particular night.